Ah, there we go. All right. Beautiful. Cheers, everybody.
All right.
Fantastic. Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. This is the place where we are simplifying the good life in every way. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Brandon Rhodes, and we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, and that's nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally, with a global perspective, and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communications, the internet, summer's 4 months late.
Summer's 4 months late, yeah. But here with a vengeance now. Yeah. 96 degrees, and we were away for the whole thing.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Yeah. Well, Portland was here to swelter and roast without us. Yeah.
We were in the forest.
We were in the forest, and I was going to talk about that because it was an exciting trip. I really enjoy it. Stubbs Stewart State Park, LL Stubbs Stewart. We still never figured out why he was called Stubb. It's a nickname in quotation marks, and I don't know why. Best we could figure out is he had a peg leg or something like that. But that's all I got.
And we can make up exciting stories as to why that was. But
right, right. Well, yeah, obviously he was a pirate.
Yeah, exactly.
He was a swashbuckler, and then he retired and had a nice little paper-pushing job with the state in the Parks Division. And
the informative brochure did say he was a paper-pusher for
that
division. So.
Right, but a pirate is much more presentable than a paper-pusher.
Yes.
You like my alliteration?
I do.
Just trying to string as many.
Just getting dizzy there for a minute.
Anyways, if you haven't been to Stubbs Stewart State Park, Stubbs Stewart is one of the finest bicycle camping destinations within the Cycle Wild calls the Portland area ride shed, which is a day's ride from anywhere in the Portland metro area that you can make it work. And so we actually went from the Hillsboro MAC station out at the very end of the blue line and rode through farm country and blueberry orchards. And we skipped all the gravel roads this time, but we got to the Banks Vernonia State Trail, which is a 21-mile ribbon of asphalt that goes from Banks, Oregon, all the way up to Vernonia, Oregon. And that was like my sixth or seventh time riding the trail. I've done that several times now. But this was actually one of the best because on the way out, I was able to, from the park entrance all the way to the valley floor, basically, I was able to go without pedaling, which was like 3 miles or something.
Wow.
I think, yeah.
And so that was all sort of like the interurban up in the Seattle area. It used to be an old rail line that's been paved over, right?
That's right, except instead of a trolley line, this one, I think, carried timber out of the forest. But
yeah.
But basically the same concept.
A more morbid history.
Exactly. instead of social life, it was dying trees. But it was
dying. They're just like crying.
Well,
bring out your dead.
They were really distraught over the whole process, wouldn't you be, if you were cut off at the roots? But no, it was a good times. Anyways, I made it all the way down to the valley floor, and then I was really determined to see how far I could get. So I ended up rolling very slowly at the very last, you know. And as luck would have it, I came nearly to a stop next to some folks who had stopped and were kind of adjusting things on their bicycles. And so I'm just sitting there, you know, down in the drop bars, kind of going, trying to like roll the extra foot just to, you know, to say that I had done it. And they were kind of looking at me strangely. And I said, I haven't pedaled for 3 miles. It's awesome.
But that's awesome.
That was
it's a bit childish, but I completely understand.
Yeah. So I think I may try and go back and do that again someday, maybe at the end of another trip. But I'll take maybe more of a running start this time. And it might be helpful to have someone
that way you don't have to make the grunting noises at the end.
Exactly. All yeah. Right. Yeah. And maybe someone to clear the intersections, and maybe someone just to stand in there and make sure that no one can see my shame as I finally grind to a halt. But anyhow, that was a good weekend trip. A lot of good hiking there. So I highly recommend it. I should put a link up to all that stuff up on the internet on our website, which is thesprocketpodcast.com. Have you heard of that, Brennan?
Yeah, I think I have, yeah.
What was it called again?
Thesprocketpodcast.com.
We got to say it a couple times just so people get that. Anyways, that's it. We are sitting here in our basement studio out here in Lentz, Oregon, with Sally, the author of ilovethebus.wordpress.com.
Nice to see you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming out. You operate a fantastic little website, which we'll get into a little bit later, and all of your other transit affections and fascinations. I feel like we are kindred spirits already.
Because
anyone who hangs out with me knows that I'm always working out the transit routes. I have a little transit tracker inside my head that I'm always kind of thinking
about. Encyclical knowledge of the entire Pacific Northwest's, I guess, rail and bus shed would be the variant on it.
Yeah. The saddest part of Oregon is actually Florence, because you can't get there by bus.
Really? Florence?
I don't believe you can. I should go back and check. And I think maybe you used to.
It would
be
a lovely bicycle ride from Eugene to get there. But
it depends on which way you go.
Indeed.
Yeah. Going out through Veneta is no fun at all. But
okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. It's narrow. But that's neither here nor there. We got a couple things. We got headlines, actually. So let's...
And the FYI of what we're drinking tonight.
Oh, yeah. Wait,
it's
Brandon,
one of our very favorite brewing companies.
What would I do without you?
Drink anonymously. All just be assuming you're having PBR.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm having a high life. we're having Fat Tire.
That we are. That's from the Fort Collins. And actually, the New Belgium Brewing Company. And this label actually does not have the bicycle on it, because on the back it says, "Where'd you take the bike?" They're having a contest now.
Oh, whoa.
So, yeah,
I didn't even notice the bike on the front of the label.
It's hiding on the back. I first noticed this actually down in Klamath Falls at the end of our Crater Lake bicycle tour, there's no
bike. That would have freaked me out if you hadn't told me.
No bike. You look down, you're like, wait, where'd it go? But
rubbing your thumb over it to see if it
exactly
so, warms up.
So if any of you guys who down there in Fort Collins who listen to this show actually are responsible for that label design and the absence of the bicycle, we salute you. By the way, Fort Collins, our friend Bison, he was on some episodes back with Arbutus Builders. I don't know, actually. I haven't looked into it. I'm not sure what is happening with Arbutus Builders, if it's continuing on without Bison. But Bison and his family, his wife and his son, moved down to Fort Collins. So we'll have to see if we can get people in touch at some point in time.
Maybe we'll have to all go out there and
maybe we'll all have to go to Fort Collins, yeah. And then we can take the, what was that, one of the listeners wrote in and said there's a bicycle pub crawl you can take in Fort Collins. He outlined it very, very in detail.
Okay.
So, hey, headlines.
All right.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
As fast as we can into the morning light, pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight, pedal just as fast as we can into the night light, pedal just.
And that was local Portland band Hurtbird who contributed that track.
And first up from Bike Portland, Tori Bortman tells you how to patch up your relationship with inner tubes.
Patch up, right?
I see which. I see, oh, yeah.
Anyways, it's a fully comprehensive guide, and I'm sure anyone who's done any bicycling for any amount of time has probably done this and probably done it successfully. So you probably have some knowledge in the field, I would assume already. But Tori has a fantastic step by step guide, and she really gets into in particular the emulsifying process, because I figure you buy a patching kit and they get the little tube of what you think is glue, right? Like I always thought it was glue.
I thought it was glue.
Yeah, apparently. Not glue. you rough up the tube with the sandpaper, getting it ready for the application of the patch. And the fluid is actually an emulsifying fluid, so instead of making it sticky, it actually kind of breaks. There's some chemical reaction in the rubber that causes the rubber in the tube to fuse to the rubber in the patch. And so that's why this chemical that you get in the tube patching kit is so important and so vital, is because it's like a skin graft, basically, for your inner tube. So, yeah, but it's a wonderful step by step guide, and I recommend you go and read it over now.
Now
or later.
Zone out for the next 3 minutes. All right. Also from Bike Portland, Northwest Portland cycling route gets ugly reactions from an unfriendly driver. This was an epically scary article.
It really was. And I don't have, there's all manner of bad news everywhere all the time. And so I try not to traffic in too much of that. But this was a fascinating study just because it was so obtuse, really. And you, I think, Brandon, read it before I did. So maybe
and
you
I almost
sum it
never
up.
Read an entire article.
Yeah, but this was a
I
long
start
one.
To skim, but yeah. I. was captivated. Yeah, Jonathan was detailing this fell up on Skyline Boulevard, which is sort of a what do you call them, Freds or whatever.
Yeah, I call them Freds. I believe that's what Bike Snob NYC. Yeah.
The people who wear the tight, awkward clothing and they pedal around. And,
yeah.
Anyhow, they
and to be fair,
they're the victims in this story. So I'm not trying to set them up as otherwise.
I was just going to say, to be fair, I should say that I have no resentment against. Well, it's not true. I do have resentment, but I'm working very hard to accept all kinds of cyclists. So. Searching for a sound effect for me. Yeah, thank you.
I wanted the cricket music. Nah, I couldn't find it.
I deserve it.
Yeah. So, yeah. There's this guy out there who's pretty uptight about bicycles and right of way and Oregon regulations regarding maintaining the speed of the road. So he's been showing up right behind people, and he'll ride a bicyclist's fender. Like right behind him, and just hold down the horn.
Yeah, like in his
car.
Or
and
truck.
They'll slow down and get it right to the edge of between the asphalt and the gravel, and they won't. And he won't stop or pass them until they're basically in the gravel.
Mm. So he's essentially running them or bullying them off the road.
Yeah, well, and then often he's hopped out of his car and like instructed them in the way of the law and how the law is actually such that, according to his interpretation. They have to hop off. If you can't maintain the speed limit, you have to get out of the way.
Right, right.
Entirely.
And don't bring the mood
down.
He
won't pass on a double yellow and all this and that. And even if there's judicial precedents that say otherwise, that bicycles, because the law says the word driver instead of user, that therefore we are exempt from it. And look, we're going to try and get out of the way, but we don't have to maintain a speed limit and all these things. Basically, the law isn't on his side, and he's threatening people and saying, "Until if you guys don't obey this law, one of you guys is going to get hurt or killed."
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like right on the edge of a threat.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the cycling community is trying to figure out what to do in the situation. Boycotting him and making him feel ashamed is only going to provoke him further.
Right. I think someone mentioned standing outside like his driveway with picket signs.
Yeah, that's a really good gesture of,
it seems like
rapprochement. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it would be entertaining, but at the same time, it probably would be, it would do no more to bridge goodwill between the parties offended. So,
yeah. Finding a creative way to outflank him in this and have some sort of reconciliation.
Yeah.
It really pissed me off reading that.
Right, right. Well, you think in a perfect world you'd be able to go and ride your bicycle anywhere you wanted to, but there are not always people who are excited about that. I know just from just this last summer, rural Washington, rural Oregon, you and I, Brandon, did a couple of rides through farm country, that sort of thing. And yeah, just because you have the legal right to the full lane here in Oregon doesn't mean that it's always a good idea to claim that right.
No, absolutely not. I err on the side of deferring and waving people on and passing, and I try to come to as full a stop as I can at every appropriately red-marked intersection.
Good man.
Thank you.
Nicely done.
It does often involve a look over my shoulder to make sure there isn't a cop. we're ambassadors of a group that people love to hate for minor infractions.
Mm-hmm.
We have some bad uncles. In a sense, our family's got some awkward. That's a weird phrase.
We have some awkward people in our family.
We do, exactly. Of which I'm one, perhaps.
I've been him at least once or twice.
But the fact of the matter is, this guy's like paradigm is like we are here for the laws, not the laws being here for us, and that just seems so bass ackwards.
Right. Or possibly we are here simply for his annoyance, and that's
and the law just happens to be a good leveraging point to sort of tell us to fuck off.
Yeah, and that's not entirely true either, so what can you do?
Yeah, he needs a hug.
He does need a hug, yeah, but probably not from a cyclist.
We should bake him cookies that look like sprockets.
Damn, we should. All right we're going to get on this. I at the end of the article, like you said, it was a long article, but I think there was talk of sending a Portland police officer up there, and I can't remember if it's still in Portland's jurisdiction, if it's in the Portland city limits or not, but I think they were talking about sending a guy up there just to... I suppose, to be a mole. So no. I mean, you don't want to see a guy get slapped with a bunch of unnecessary fines, but he probably does sound like he needs a good...
When he's threatening people.
A good straight talking to.
Yeah. And some cookies.
That's right. And so, a hug.
Yeah. His mom needed to hug him more growing up, I tell you what. Portland Eyes has some a photo series of bicycles carrying multiple people.
Yeah.
That's
no,
cute.
It's just great.
Say yeah, no more.
That's right. No, Dave. No. Yeah. Next story. No, Dave Fucht, I believe. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. And if he ever hears this, he'll probably correct me. And I'm sorry, Dave. I apologize for the mispronunciation of your last name. But Portland Eyes is a fantastic blog, and all of the posts are nice and short and succinct. They always have a photo or two, and this one happened to have lots of photos. I think the title of the post was Single Occupancy Vehicles? Hardly. And it was a bunch of, you know, children and multiple children on the backs of bikes and a dog in a trailer and that sort of thing. So that's it. How's that beer?
Good.
Ah, that's great.
I don't know why I didn't ding-ding while I burped off mic. Cast Iron Cyclist has an article. Matt reflects on humanity and civilization while touring Yellowstone.
Yeah.
This sounds apocalyptic.
It's fascinating. Is Matt, well, in the grand tradition of mispronouncing last names, I still don't know how to pronounce Matt Picchio. I believe that's his last name.
You didn't
name.
Write it down on my paper.
But no, I did not know.
You were looking at
I'm sorry,
with,
I don't expect you to know.
With a query in,
no, it's
in
okay.
Our gaze.
No, but it's like the classic curse of the kid who reads, you know, big books when he's like 12 and then he, you know, can't pronounce, you know, any big words, but he knows what they mean. Anyways, Matt's the founder of Cycle Wild, and yeah, his article was basically this big reflection on going to Yellowstone and seeing tourists and realizing that not everybody is ready for an apocalypse if it happens. So, I don't think he was thinking so much of apocalypse, but just like he's not a big fan of civilization in general, and sometimes it's painfully obvious when
you see the sort of RV culture.
Yeah, when you're watching crowds and that sort of thing. So, anyways, that along with a bunch of other things, he's still making his cross country ride, and there's a bunch of good things that he's come across, a bunch of great riding he's done. So. Cast Iron Cyclist is his blog title. It used to be northwestwanderer.com, and I believe it's castironcyclist.com.
Now that he's crossed the Rockies, he's got to come up with something better.
Yeah.
That's a better name. That's a great name.
Yeah, totally. Well, of course, he is the one that tours with a large skillet. It's like a 9-pound skillet or something like that. But, you know, he likes cooking, so good on him.
May as well do it well. All right, and lastly, Good Magazine, by way of Oregon Live. What happens when you put a coffee table at a bus stop? How did I miss this article? I subscribed to both of these. This is an interesting thing.
No, that's okay.
Tell me more.
It was basically that guy, or I don't know if it was a guy or a lady. Might have been a lady.
A person
whose gender remains unclear, was putting up a coffee table at a Los Angeles bus stop and just trying to deal with the dynamic of public space and trying to make the outdoors kind of more habitable. And, yeah, they set up it wasn't a stop motion. Maybe it was stop motion. Anyways, there was kind of heard this herky-jerky time-lapse thing where there's just a coffee table, much like the one that we're sitting next to, set up. It's got a vase with flowers in it and everything. Mm. Is it vase or vase?
I say vase.
Okay, yeah.
By the way, I think that's a brilliant idea.
Isn't that great?
And I wish I came up with that.
Yeah, yeah. Sally, have you ever seen a coffee table at a Portland bus stop,
a transit stop? Not.
Well, we're going to have to get on that.
I know.
Next time any of us see a coffee table in a free pile, let us all oath now to drag it to the nearest.
That's right. Yeah.
Bus stop.
Well, you had people hanging out at the bus stop, and I'm not sure that they were necessarily catching the bus. They were just kind of hanging out. They're like, "Hey, it's a table, you know." And I think
what there was gather around it.
Yeah, there were these two young ladies. They were like probably school age, you know, junior high or something. They sit down and they're just kind of chatting. And then another dude like strolls by and like plucks one of the flowers out of the vase and looks at it. And it was pretty great. So I didn't actually get to the end of the video, so I don't know all of the things that happened. But that
and then I switched tabs.
Well, yeah. My computer doesn't do video so well anymore.
That's
it's getting
true.
Old.
That's true.
It barely captures audio. You listeners should be glad that you're hearing this. Technology only goes
so
far.
On a 5-year-old machine, it's amazing.
That's right. It's virtually decrepitly ancient. But
damn,
not really.
Damn you, Steve Jobs.
And your proprietary technology.
That's right. Well, then that wraps up our...
Those are our headlines. Good. So, anyways. Well, Sally, would you like... what kind of a fanfare would you like to introduce your presence on the show?
What are my choices?
Remind us, Brandon.
Royal... Gong, Classic movie.
I'm going to have to go with classic movie.
All right, there we go.
Dear and near and far, listeners, we present to you Sally,
the anonymous author of ilovethebus.wordpress.com. I'm going to say it again just to get it all out in one big chunk so it's memorable. Or maybe you should say, since you you probably do it best.
Yeah, I'm okay with it not being memorable, but it's ilovethebus.wordpress.com.
Excellent. So you should tell us, first of all, what it is that this website is all about. I know it, and Brandon knows it, but for anyone who hasn't been there yet.
So I Love the Bus is really just a small blog that I do in my off hours about positive experiences I have on transit. Not just the bus, because here in Portland we have both the MAX train and the streetcar, as well as our bus line. And I just share these really positive experiences, and they're generally small, and they're generally quiet, and they're ones that you kind of have to slow down and pay attention to. But that's what I like about the bus, these mm-hmm. kind of very human moments that I observe.
Mm. So you capture these, and that comes out, is it like once a week, or give or take, or is it more sporadic?
It's pretty sporadic. I tried for once a week, but yeah.
I guess that just depends on what happens and when the cool things happen.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, how long have you been doing this?
Probably about a year. I've been writing the blog for about a year, but I've been making notes about riding the bus for years.
Okay.
For a decade at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had you heard of the Constant Rider before we had talked about it by email?
No, okay. That was my first introduction, so that was great.
Yeah,
thanks for connecting me
with
that.
Well, I guess it's the sort of thing that I like zines, but I'm not like big in the zine community. I don't keep up with the latest releases and everything. So I heard about it, I think, long after it was kind of published in a thing, but we were privileged to get to talk to her as well. But I do love just people writing about the things that happen, just because it seems like there are so many misconceptions about what happens on the bus. But.
And it'd be so much easier to write a blog about bitching.
Right.
Because there's some horrible and annoying shit that happens on a bus.
There is.
But there are some beautiful things, right?
It's really easy to talk about the negative stuff, and people just get caught up in that. And there are just too many good things that don't get talked about. I mean, really, really amazing things that happen. And I've made some good friendships on the bus. It's been a really great experience for me.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we should start with the postcard. We talked about this some issues back, some episodes back, but you brought the postcard that we referred to in a frame. And it's, I believe it's, is it enclosed on both sides?
It is enclosed on both sides.
That's a beautiful frame.
So you can see the front and back of it, and it's just a simple postcard. And I went to sit down one day on the bus on my way to work, and the postcard was sitting in the seat, and I picked it up and flipped it over, and it says, "People are far kinder than you imagine." So I thought, someone picked this postcard up, decided to scribble this message, take it with them on the bus, and then leave it for someone else to find. And I can't imagine why you would do that. That just seems like one of the greatest gifts you could just give back to a stranger. It completely made my day.
Right. It's probably like the most literal paying it forward you could think of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I have this. I'm not sure. I feel like I need to do something with it and haven't figured out quite what to do with this postcard.
Right. We were talking, you keep it on a stand right now?
I do. Yeah. I do. I show company when they come over. I tell everybody the story from the bus.
There
and
you
people
go.
Are generally impressed by it. Yeah.
Nice. You said you hang out with some folks that you've met from the bus. Would you say that a large number of your friends are transit riders, or are you kind of an anomaly among your friends?
You know, I think actually a lot of people here in Portland ride transit, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Outside of Portland, I've ridden transit in other states. I was more of an anomaly among my friends. But here, a lot of people ride transit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're pretty fortunate here in Portland.
Yeah. What do they say? TriMet is number one transit in America, which there is some controversy over what that means and the nature of its number oneness. But
it's number one in my heart.
That's right. I mean, well, we live here and we take it.
It's number one in Portland, at least.
That's right. Also in Beaverton and Hillsboro. But
yeah. And Gresham and Clackamas, too.
Indeed. In fact, the entire Tri-County area.
Aye.
Yeah. We're so dumb. Anyway.
We'll just keep naming things Yamhill. No.
That's right. I swear, if we had microphones running at this house like 24 hours a day, you have no idea how much of this kind of conversation you would capture. Anyways, maybe, Sally, tell us about how you started with transit in the first place. Like, what was your first experience?
Okay, so I grew up in New York State, upstate New York, not the city. And I rode transit as a young child and then as a young woman. And that was more because we didn't own a car. For a big period of my life, my family didn't own a car. Hmm. So we rode transit out of necessity. And outside of Portland and outside of other urban cities, transit has a class issue going on with it. So it's clear that the people riding transit mm-hmm. are from a different social class than the people who drive. There's a choice in that. So I came to transit with that notion and moved to California for a bit and didn't have money for a car, so rode my bike or rode transit and had issues with transit internally about that. There's that history of class and if I just had enough money to have a car, and I felt uneasy on transit. Like we shared earlier, there are often negative things that people say. Everybody's drunk, everybody smells, everybody's homeless, and some of that's kind of true.
On the 72.
Yes, yes.
And the number 9 after 9 p.m.
Oh, I bet.
So riding in California, I had this internal struggle going on. And then there was this moment that I observed that kind of helped me see it differently. And this was, there's a gentleman, an older gentleman who was homeless, who was skinny as all get out, who was holding up his pants that were probably donated and probably about 5 times too big for him. And when he was exiting the bus, he needed to hold on to the rails to get out of the bus. And as he did that, his pants started to come down, and I saw the driver get up and reach over and kind of loop his finger through the man's back belt loop to keep his pants up so this gentleman didn't, you know, drop his drawers.
Right. You can't hold the rail and the pants at the same time.
And it was just this great moment of really simple human kindness. And after that, I started looking for that on the bus, and it helped me feel differently about the bus. Mm-hmm. And now I don't own a car, and I don't own a car by choice. And I really love riding the bus. I really love looking for those experiences.
Yeah. Did you, in that incidence with the fellow getting off the bus and the driver, did you talk to the driver about it, or was it just something observed?
It was something observed, and I just kind of mulled over and kept close to my heart, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Most of those experiences is probably not the things you see are not usually the things you're talking with people about. It's the little slices of life that you don't really, it's not an interaction so much as just an interesting vignette.
Yeah, exactly.
Or something like that. Yeah. That's fantastic. I've got to say, I mean, there are good, not good and bad. Maybe I should say there are friendly and unfriendly. There are genial and not so genial. Congenial, that's the word, isn't it? I just got the picture of a bus driver coming out of a Aladdin's lamp or something. But no, there are bus drivers who are friendly and those who are...
With the voice of Robin Williams.
Exactly. Yeah. What hell. Anyways, it seems like more drivers in Portland of both bus and Max are friendlier people, I think, than any other transit systems I've encountered. And I have encountered a whole lot, but especially like I spend a lot of time in Boston when I go over to visit like my in-laws and that sort of thing. And I think the East Coast in general probably has a reputation for being more brusque, at least. Like they're not the street side demeanor is not nearly as friendly, I suppose, as the West Coast maybe. But that's reflected sometimes in the transit, I think, as well. But I've just been very impressed when I ride TriMet that there are some drivers under quite a bit of strain, and they oftentimes perform and excel. So it's nice to see.
Yeah, I appreciate the drivers. I think they've got a really tough job, too.
They do, yeah.
Oh, if you get to talking with them, ask them about any of the mild blizzards we've had or whatever.
Oh, gosh,
they love telling those stories because they finally get to gush about what they talk about at the water over the water cooler or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
They mostly have tense relationships with drivers or with riders in my experience.
Yeah. I think it's tough for them. They, you know, anytime there's a crime close by a route, they get a kind of a running ticker of what's going on. If there's an abducted child, they need to look for that. So things that we don't even realize they're doing, that's part of their job.
Right.
I wouldn't like to be inundated with that kind of information. And then you've got the folks who aren't necessarily polite to drivers and stuff like that. And good God, you couldn't pay me enough money to drive. So
you've never wanted to be a transit driver?
I never wanted to be a bus driver.
Okay. I think I used to, but I think I'm less enchanted with the idea of driving now. But I do appreciate the drivers, the good ones I've met. Have you connected with any in particular here in town or elsewhere?
I always try to get to know the drivers that I see on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So the morning driver who kind of waits for me when I'm running late, he knows that I'm on my way almost every day. And I've had him wait for me. And then I had a driver who was a really special driver. He would always wait for me on the way home. Mm-hmm. So we have a stop here in Portland that's kind of a bear to get to. If you take the train in, you can see across this space that you can't cross. The bus is waiting for you. And you've got to kind of run up a staircase and run down a staircase to get to that bus on the other side. So sometimes you'd get off your train and look across and see your bus there, and you'd have to hightail it up those stairs. So he got to know me, and he'd always tell me, I'm waiting for you. Don't worry. I'm looking out for you. And we'd have this kind of connection every evening.
That's great.
Yeah, it was great. And then when his last week came around, he kept telling me, it's my last week. Just want to let you know. And on his last day, I walked to the front to say goodbye to him and to thank him. And he handed me a slip of paper and he said, "Here, I signed it. You do the same." And I looked down and he handed me a lottery ticket. And he'd sign the back, and he's like, "I'm on the 17, so now you got to look for me if we win."
Oh, gosh. Awesome.
It is.
Oh.
What happened with the ticket?
We didn't win.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it's nothing new, I suppose, right? Happens every day.
Yeah.
I haven't been so lucky with lottery. At first, I think just out of chance, I must have won like $10 or something. So for a while, I was ahead, and then I started falling behind. I said, I can't afford this. But what can you do?
Having those relationships with the driver can really change it all. I had a regular bus driver for a late night. I caught the 10:49 p.m. 19 from 28th and Glisson.
Glisson.
Yeah. Proper pronunciation.
So here in Portland, just for anyone who's not from Portland, we got a street that is commonly referred to as Gleason because it's G-L-I-S-A-N. But apparently the proper pronunciation, Brandon, is...
Glisson.
Glisson, yeah.
Yeah, which is the proper pronunciation... No, it's the proper pronunciation of the man's name, which arguably is different from how locals...
True enough.
Say the actual street name.
True enough.
So, anyway, I got into a tissy with the missus-to-be about this. Anyway, that's another episode.
But you were saying.
No, but like...
Late nights.
Clearly, the guy doesn't get enough people who are nice or tolerant of him. And then he would talk about, like, I was whining about, like, my dental issues, and he would instruct me in the ways of hydrogen peroxide diluted in water and how to slosh that about. And turns out he's a completely crazy Tea Party type.
Oh. Right. No offense to you, Tea Partyers.
Now, what are you doing listening to this show? God bless you. And I used to be very much in that direction about a decade ago. And it turned into a very sort of healthy friendship of awkwardness, of like he was not aware that there are other ways of like perceiving the world. Anyway, but it was good. Like he would keep me up at the front of the bus for a full 40 minutes.
Right.
I couldn't get away. He didn't get basic social cues. He's an awkward man. But, like he gave me so many good handshakes and looked me in the eye.
Right.
I appreciate you. Mm. I appreciate our conversations.
Makes up for a lot of awkwardness.
Yeah. And I took it as an opportunity. And I wanted to stereotype him as one of those homophobic, patriotic, mean-spirited.
Yeah.
Bet, you know.
one of those. Okay, yeah.
And be really fucking self-righteous about it.
Sure.
But the fact of the matter is, every other writer there were so many other ones that, that really loved him. He really loved people. He was suspicious of black people and women. But besides that,
it was great.
Just like, wow. But like a little Korean gal came on the bus and gave him a thing of cookies.
Wow.
At like 11 o'clock at night. You know, and like you know the guy's politics, and I'm like, fuck this guy. Fuck this guy.
Just knee-jerk reaction.
No, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like it, like this sustained cordiality, like got to the point where it's like I deeply am terrified of how he sees the world, but he's really nice to the people who are in front of him.
He's still a human being.
Right.
Bingo. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I have to get the like fuck you attitude out of my mind and
right,
heart.
Right. It was far less apocalyptic on the bus line than you had feared.
Well, the bus puts us in relationship or at least proximity to people who we'd really like to say fuck off to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I actually think that's great. I think
it's great too.
To brush elbows with those folks.
Cross pollination.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Well, maybe this would be a good time. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to pick this question up on the other side because we should throw in a musical break here. But we'll come right back to, let's see, how did I word it here? What do you see as some of the common misconceptions about transit? So I'll let you stew on that one while the song plays. We've got, Jack Littman is a guy who calls himself techno folk, I think, or something like that. Or electro folk. Anyways, he sent a message to our email address, which is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. And he said, hey, I would love to be on the Sprocket Podcast. So this is his song, Waiting. It's from his new release called simply The Mixtape. His website is www.jacklittman.com. And once again, this is Waiting.
Tonight, don't fight your curves. It takes all my might, my nerves. I can't see no other body but yours to mine. All others can. Well, I've been waiting for you. fight your curves.
Dynamically employed.
You are dynamically employed. All right, welcome back to the Sprocket Podcast. It's Brock, and that's Brandon, and that's Sally from ilovethebus.word. Oh, man, I'm doing it again. WordPress.com. All right, well, anyways. We've got a couple things as far as business is concerned to inform everybody about. Next week, Jonathan Moss of Bike Portland is going to be in the studio with us. And by the studio, we mean our basement in front of some non-professional audio gear. But hey, he's showing up to talk to us, and we're excited about that. So we've got a few more things. Let me check my schedule here real quick. I forgot to write it down, but a few more folks. Team Sincerity, we're going to get together with them. Actually, Brandon, I need to talk to you about scheduling for that because we need to throw a show together. But the folks that went with me down to Crater Lake, we're going to recap that whole story.
Good.
And then, let's see, that'll be Labor Day weekend.
That's Team Sincerity.
Team Sincerity is what we ended up calling ourselves. Yeah.
Good.
And then September 13th, Ethan Seltzer, he's on the East Coast. He's with an organization called Pedal Power. And they generate electricity with stationary bicycles, I believe. So, or maybe with bicycles that are made to be stationary. Either way, they make electricity solely with humans.
By spinning their legs.
Human power, yeah. So anyways, excited to talk to him about that. And then from there, there's some more folks, but I don't have their names in front of me, so I don't remember who they are.
Rod Sadowski is going to be on the
Rob Sadowski, 19th, that's right.
The 19th. I will not be able to be here for that show.
Oh, right.
On my honeymoon.
That's right. Yeah, well, where would you rather be, right? I mean, yeah.
Honeymoon.
I'll talk to our friend David Hetty because I bet he would kill for a chance to
I'm
sit
gonna
down.
I'm going
to
record
the,
some questions for him.
Okay, that sounds good. We'll play them in your voice.
Thank you. In my voice?
Yeah.
You won't like Darth Vader them or anything? That's good.
No, we won't do a thing. We'll do all kinds of stuff. We won't do a thing. Rosa is our contest winner, I believe. I'm not sure if she's up in Alaska or not. I thought she was. Anyways, I wrote to her and said, hey, you won our $10 prize contest. And, she said, hey, buy some beer with it. So
hey.
We are drinking a six-pack of Fat Tire tonight, thanks to Rosa. So anyways, we appreciate the good turn in kind. That was, it was unexpected, but we are thankful. So anyways, Logan, our friend Logan of RowdyKittens.com, mentions that Dan Price, the tallest hobbit in the world, offers simple living consultations over the phone. And he sent me a little infographic that apparently showed up on Dan Price's website, I think. And I believe it's public knowledge, so I'm just going to read it here. If you want to talk to Dan Price, if you want to talk to a tall hobbit about how to simplify your life, you can call him at 541-398-2299. And Sally, have you heard of Dan Price before?
I have not.
This is a guy that lives out in eastern Oregon for part of the year, and then he goes to Hawaii and surfs. And then he comes back and lives in basically what is a hobbit hole that he created in a piece of land out in Joseph.
Hobbits are terrified of water. They would never surf. I do not believe him.
Well, he's a tall hobbit.
Okay.
Yeah, that's otherwise it wouldn't work at all. But anyways, he sounds like a cool guy. I would love to talk to him in person someday. So my first step will probably be to call 541-398-2299 and say, Dan Price, you want to talk to us here on the Sprocket? So we'll see what happens with that. Listener Antonio sent a link to us, the Dyno Hub that we were discussing last week with our good friend from Edible Cycles. If you're not in Portland, you can't shop at Clever Cycles. There's also, I think the same hub is on Amazon.com. So he sent us a link to that. So we'll put that up there.
After that episode, I totally put it on my wedding registry. I'm totally stoked.
That's it's a good thing.
I want to power everything with my bicycle.
Seriously. How much fun would that be?
You know exhausting. What?
I think we stopped recording. No? Are we still recording? We are still recording. Good things. I have a slow processor.
If I can't use the shit out of them, I won't use them at all.
That's machines. I just push record. Anyways, where were we? Oh, that's it. Share your independent music suggestions with... Wow. I only had one beer. I just can't talk is basically all. Share your independent music... I have no idea what's happening tonight. Maybe I need more water. If you know of some independent music we could play on the show, you should send that our way. I'm not going to try the double G again. I have no idea why it doesn't work. Oh, and one more thing. The Jack Littman song that we played and his entire EP is free over at jacklittman.com. I think he's... That's right. Also on Bandcamp, I think, is that website. So there we go. That's all of our business out of the way. So, Sally, you said we were talking during the break, and you were saying we kind of already covered some of the common misperceptions. Is there anything else?
No, you know, I think in general people are afraid of the bus, or just are afraid that the folks that they're going to encounter are addicts or homeless or crazy. And for the most part, here in Portland, that's not true. And I've ridden the bus in many other states, and for the most part, that's not true in other states as well. Now I'm rambling.
Oh, it's okay. That's all we do here. That's what this is all about.
I'm catching it. So yeah, I think that's the basic misconception. And right. Transit is actually a great way to get to meet people, to connect. You know, you save money, you save the environment, you get to where you're going when you need to. But you can also build relationships with people. And I've been lucky enough to do that. I've formed my book club around the bus.
Yeah.
We've named our book club for the bus we met on, which was really nice.
Nice. How did this come about? How did a book club start from people that ride the
from
bus
meeting
together?
On the bus? Well, if you ride the bus, you know, many people choose to read while they're on the bus. That's kind of one of the pleasures of riding.
Right. And that was one of your most recent posts as well, right?
Reading on the bus,
what people
yeah.
are reading
yeah.
these days. Yeah.
yeah, it's a great way to talk about books or get recommendations. So I was chatting with this woman who I'd never met about a book she happened to be reading, and she pulled in a woman she had just met, and the three of us were chatting, and we all boarded the bus and were on our way, and then the bus driver had an altercation with a young fellow who decided to kick the door and crack it. So we all,
wow.
I know.
That's exciting.
Yeah. We all had to get off the bus, and while we were waiting for another bus to come, the three of us kind of reconnected, and someone said something about a book club, and I said, I'd like to start a book club, and we said, let's start a book club. So we started a book club.
And there it
so
was.
There's, yeah. We're a small book club. There's just four of us, but we love that we met on the bus. We were strangers beforehand, and that's kind of a great way to build community. The bus allows you to do that. You're mm-hmm. all getting on and riding a certain line in a certain direction. So these folks are your neighbors, homeless or not, mentally ill or not. They're still your neighbors.
Right. Yeah. Did you read that? I don't know if you read Portland Afoot or not. We were talking about Portland Afoot earlier, but the most recent issue mentioned a novelist who wrote a book set mostly on the Line 75, I believe.
No, that's awesome.
Which is pretty great. Yeah. And I believe a lot of it has to do with just kind of the interactions that that people have when they're in this public space and mm-hmm. kind of traveling the same direction together. So what's your ethic, Sally, on iPods and other musical diversions? Because I know that's something a lot of people do when they ride the bus. It's also something that, I mean, either on the bus or elsewhere in public space, that kind of separates people. It kind of cuts people off from what's happening around them and makes it harder to connect. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I tend not to listen to music while I'm riding. I kind of like to be available, and sometimes I don't have a conversation with anybody. Sometimes I just listen and watch, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I just had an experience a couple of weeks ago where I was having an off morning and was listening to my iPod and was waiting for my bus to arrive, and I saw this fellow who was kind of dressed all in dark black and gray, and he had cut off Dickies and lots of tattoos and a shaved head. But he had these really bright orange and yellow socks. And I didn't want to take my headphones off. I was in a negative space, but I just couldn't resist. So I did. I took my headphones off and went over to him and said, you know, I really like your socks. And he could not have been happier.
They just made his day.
I did. And it turns out he'd knit these socks.
Really?
And he was on his way to Sock Fest or Sock Summit.
It was like a sock convention?
Yes. And he was there to
He's
buy.
He's a sockophile. That's great.
It was crazy. But who knew, right? And if yeah. I'd just kept my headphones in and done what, you know, a lot of folks do on the bus, I would never know that.
You wouldn't have an end to the world of knitting.
Yeah. He gave me knitting tips and all kinds of crazy things. Yeah.
That's great. Do you also knit?
I don't.
Oh, okay.
No.
So he gave you some tips on starting
out. He tipped
out.
You off. You should knit.
He did, actually. I made these. They're easy.
Dude. Yeah.
I think I was reading some letters by John Steinbeck last weekend, and I think he actually was a knitter as well. He mentioned it a couple times in these letters, and I thought that was kind of strange because I figured, you know, he's a writer. That's what he does. But he might have knitted as well. I thought maybe it was metaphoric knitting, but I'm not sure.
Hmm.
Anyways,
He weaves a good tale all the same.
He does indeed.
That's craft entirely.
Yeah, I just finished reading East of Eden. It's a great novel. And watching both film versions and now reading the letters that accompanied the first manuscript. So I've done everything there is to do. There is no more East of Eden that I can possibly have now. It's all over. Oh, good times.
Steinbeckian Bacchanalia with Brock Dittus.
That's right.
I have ridden the bus in Salinas where the Steinbeck Museum is. Yeah.
Have you? Have you been to the museum itself?
I have.
Nice.
It's worth going to.
It seems like it would be. I mean, he had a large body of work.
Yeah. You know what Brock is doing next summer?
Seriously, yeah. Taking a bus journey down to Salinas. Actually, we should talk. There was this Evergreen College professor who wrote a travelogue of his journeys from Olympia, kind of down the coast by public transit and then inland, I think, once he hit the Redwood Forest. But he made it all the way to L.A.
Nice.
So I would imagine it's probably possible to get to Salinas as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely something to do later on.
You're going to have the time of your life, Brock.
Seriously. Well,
sitting and watching.
It just makes me wish that I was retired already and I had the money so I could just like take the bus and then, you know, stay in hotels or something. But we'll see.
A man of ambition.
That's right. Speaking of long distance transit, and this is just the thing that, basically I think I was saying this is a springboard for me to talk about something I get excited about. But are you familiar, Sally, with epictransitjourneys.com?
No.
Yeah.
All these great resources.
It's a great little deal. Basically, some guy, he's an engineer from Tacoma, I think, who is just excited about data and transit systems. And he ended up stitching together some travel tables for how to catch the bus from Portland to Seattle, just taking public transit lines. So not Amtrak, not Greyhound or any of the other private coach carriers, but just public transit lines. And at one point, you could get there for $10, I think, from Portland to Seattle.
Whoa.
Now it's $13 because there have been some schedule changes. One of the crucial links, I think they're run by a nonprofit and they're running out of money. Mm-hmm. So they used to go to Olympia. Now they just go to Chehalis, which means it's like three extra buses to catch. But $13 will get you there if you have all day.
Yeah.
So,
and a half.
That's right. And I haven't checked. I know you can't do it on a Sunday, but the Saturday timetables are different. I haven't worked them out yet. But anyway, so there's that. And then there's also, who was it? Up in Olympia. Rebelsbybus.net. I think all the words are hyphenated. But it's just a couple of ladies that got excited about transit connections, and they put together how to get around the Olympic Peninsula. So, out to Aberdeen and up to Forks and Port Angeles and back around through Bremerton. And you could do a three-day trip, I think is what they said. only using public transit buses, and you could have a full vacation.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's fantastic.
It's awesome.
Yeah. So
the fact that people have dedicated any amounts of time to telling other people about how awesome that is just gives me hope.
Right. I do enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, I think you were saying, Sally, you brought some things that you had written. Would you like to share some of that with us?
Sure. I think one of the first things I shared on my blog from last year was this post called An Intimate Act. While making my way to work this morning on the bus, I observed a simple encounter, just a moment long, but it stayed with me. An older woman and a young man were sitting opposite one another in the seats at the front of the bus that faced the aisle. The woman appeared to be in her 70s, gray hair was peeking out from under her cap, and she carried a shopping bag. The man was in his 20s. He'd loaded his bike on the bus before boarding and was dressed for riding. Out of the blue, the woman raised her leg, extending her foot in the direction of the young man, and asked, "Will you tie my shoe for me?" And he, without a moment's hesitation, replied, "Sure," leaning forward and tied her shoe. Reaching out to tie her shoe seemed such an intimate act. There was something humble and kind and honest in his quick response and in the ease in which he took attention. And requesting such basic assistance made the woman seem both strong and fragile at the same time. The bus arrived at the transit center. I grabbed my bag and exited out the back, looking over my shoulder toward the front. The man bounded out the front door toward the rack where his bike was latched, and the older woman remained, continuing to a further stop. I spent the entire day thinking about the beauty of this one brief moment. So that was just a really simple experience.
Yeah, I like that. That's fantastic, because that's one of those things that we were talking about, misconceptions. That's one of those realities that kind of clears up some of the air, you know, around the transit space and just around the things that people are afraid of.
Right.
You know, it seems like maybe it's like just with news in general. Whenever there's bad news, you know, it takes like 8 bad news stories to get to one good one, you know, before they wrap the news for the night or something on television. And so, yeah, it's nice to be able to offer that counterpoint every now and again.
Yeah, I agree.
I was thinking about it. It's kind of like the neighborhood that you and I live in, Brandon. Like, this here gets such a bad rap, but that's just because the only time it's in the news is when, like, something bad happens.
Yeah.
So, it's nice to have the positive stories.
Absolutely. We should share those more.
We should. Do you have another?
I have one more short one I can share. So, this is titled, Give 'em Some Space. I was a bit miffed when I noticed that 2 teenage boys had managed to take up 5 seats in the back of the bus. Their 2 long arms and legs all akimbo, and their backpacks and skateboards set on the seats surrounding them. Several people were standing. I was tempted to say something about making room for others. As I pondered if I should say something, I overheard a portion of their conversation. One of the teens said to his friend, "Sure, she's hot, but I like girls you can have a conversation with." Then, after an affirmative murmur from the friend, he went on to share, "I really want to hang out with Stacy. She makes me laugh. I mean, like, she's funny, you know? We laugh. I like that." And I thought that these boys might just need a bit of space right now to work out who they are.
Oh, young love.
Yeah.
But young, I think, unrequited love.
Teenage boys get a bad rap, especially on the bus.
Yeah.
They're loud. They're, you know, throwing things around. And
they don't want their pants held up. Yeah, those kids.
Yeah, it's not just the old guys.
It's that's great, though, because you get to, it's kind of like this tender moment,
yeah,
in which they're kind of dissecting their souls, and or at least the one guy is.
Yeah,
the other guy's there, and not making fun of him for it.
Yeah,
and there's not much space for that.
No, especially for young boys. So yeah.
I'm disposed to judge the hell out of them and want to do that. I do everything in my power to sit back there and just make them uncomfortable. No, there's always like 2 guys. There's one guy at the back of the bus sitting there with his arms farther than Christ apart, and if I may say so, without getting struck by lightning. And it's always, I've noticed it's a race thing too. And so it's like, how come there's like voluntary racial segregation on the bus? Have you seen that on some of these buses? I try and be the white guy that's willing to, like,
sit down,
be the Rosa Parks,
yeah,
in this and be like, come on, we're all going to get along again.
Yeah.
You're mixing it up.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, I think that's important to do. Yeah.
Hopefully I'm not being a dick.
No.
I don't think so. Yeah. I actually sometimes, it's not, sometimes when there's like open seats on the bus, you know, like the seating pattern on a bus kind of fills in so that everyone kind of has some space around them at first, and then things start to crowd in. So I always kind of wonder, like, how long I can like sit down on the outside of the, you know, the row, and see like how long it takes like somebody else to feel uncomfortable just because I'm like sitting there. I don't do it like, you know, if the bus is empty, but I'm very interested in that dynamic. I think it's a strange, strange thing, because it's like you're so close to this other person, and like there would be no other excuse for it anywhere else in our society. But you're on the bus, and well, there you go. So
yeah, it's this public-private space. It's
right.
It's really a tension, actually. Yeah.
Right, right.
And when people assert it as private, that's what makes it so weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they demand that it's a private space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I would say about private space is that sometimes I need enough for my knees, because I'm a very tall man. The Type 4 Max cars and those little, you know, the ones that are all... They're the newest one. They're the sexy, yeah, sleek ones with the curvy windows.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
the middle sections just have benches facing each other, and it's two of me could not fit there. One of me almost cannot fit there, so what can you do?
Sit elsewhere.
I suppose so, yeah.
Stand.
That is also
but
true.
But it's a good... These buses and these light rail systems are a great petri dish for different ways of sort of negotiating that public-private space.
It's true.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
it forces me... Like, I find it to be almost a spiritual discipline to take the bus.
Right.
Like, I can be really judgmental and pissy right now. I can retreat. Like, I can do all kinds of things on the bus. Mm-hmm. Like, it forces me to not just be me on my bike.
No, you have to think about your interactions with other people and what you want to put out and what you kind of... And I think what you put out is what you attract. So if mm-hmm. you go on with a bad attitude, you're going to find the guy who's mm-hmm. going to take up space and is not going to move over and give you some place to sit down. And yeah.
He's going to snarl back at
you. Yeah, yeah.
Whereas if you give out cookies...
Like the woman who gave them to your...
Exactly.
Yeah.
You might even get more cookies later from somebody else. Someone else paying it forward with cookies.
Baking it forward.
That's right. Well, we should probably wrap this show soon. Is there anything else you'd like to kick in? Anything, advice you'd give to people who are trepidatious about transit?
Take the bus. Take it. Just try it. If you're uncomfortable, stand up front and chat up the drivers.
There you go. They are probably they're the easiest to talk to.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we'll put a lid on the whole thing then. Thanks again, Sally, for coming out. We appreciate you being here.
Thanks
on the
Sprocket
Podcast. You listener, if you'd like to get in touch with us, if you'd like to send us your stories, tell us what happened while on your bus ride, or who snarled at you, or who left you a postcard, write to us at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can call us, tell us the story in person, 503-847-9774. And actually, that's just leaving a message, so you can leave a message for us. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. You can find him on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. Thanks to Hurtbird for our headline sounder there at hurtbirdmusic.com. And of course, ilovethebus.wordpress.com. You'll like it. Check it out. We'll see you next time around. Bye.